Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, and welcome to an Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be talking about a subject matter that people are sort of becoming detached from. The book today is titled The Art of Convening. My guest is Craig Neal, and this is about authentic engagement. Craig, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Donna.
Authentic engagement. It's really a tough thing to have many times in today's world with people texting and twittering and doing all kinds of abbreviations. And it seems like for all of this communication explosion, there's actually less of a communication capacity than before. You, Craig, have been involved. You're called a passionate evolutionary leader. What does that mean?
Thank you. I think what's being called for in today's world are leaders that possess a whole systems perspective on life, on the world. Not only are they engaged in the more practical aspects of the world, but also what we call the inner game. And so it's a balance of the inner and the outer world, and having a whole systems perspective on not only what's going on with other people, but what's going on with themselves. And what I feel is that the leaders that have a clear sense of themselves and have a sense of what their ego is all about are people that are going to be able to lead into the coming millennia. There is so much demand right now for wisdom. And so that's one of the ingredients of wisdom is seeing yourself as a person who's evolving. And so that's where the evolutionary leader comes from. It comes from a sense of that we're on a journey and that we're evolving. And to me, that adds up to that, along with life experience, adds up to wisdom. And that's what we need more and more of in this world is our wise elders, wise leaders. And I don't mean elders from a position of age, but from a position of wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, usually that does come with wisdom because there's very few 20-year-olds that have it. But that's beside the point. There are different levels of wisdom and understanding that come about, and it comes from living. And some people can have, within 1 year of their life, a tremendous amount of experience that makes them very wise in certain levels, and others have to go through a path of a lifetime, and it's everything in between. You say in your book, convening was and is one of the most powerful life-altering forces in the universe. Tell us a little bit about the ancient art of convening, which goes back to tribal areas. What did
Right.
you base this on from your research and your experience?
Well, Donna, that quote comes from our good friend Richard Leiter, one of the master coaches, and he wrote the foreword, and it was really his statement. But what I think he means is when we say convening, what we mean is the gathering, the holding of people in a safe and generative space for the sake of the highest possible outcome that can possibly be achieved between those people. And what we have lots and lots of conversations, and I think you said in your intro, you know, there's lots of engagements right now, either Facebook or just an everyday conversation. But the question is it authentic? Are we being able to express who we truly are? Are we really coming from a place of our own authority, or are we coming from a place of our own truthfulness? And so people are more and more seeking that authenticity. And so the old, I think what Richard was referring to is Human beings have been gathering around the proverbial campfire forever, since the old days. It's probably been the first place that we began to gather. And it was a place for light and heat and survival. And there's a sense of intimacy and depth, again, when we gather around that campfire. So what we talk about in this book is really the ancient practice of truly getting to know one another, to really have a conversation that really has depth, intimacy, and as our friend Peter Block says, idealism, that really reaches out beyond just the day-to-day practicalities of that transactional relationship that we tend to have. And a lot of it, unfortunately, is being sponsored by the levels of conversation that are being had on the Internet through Facebook and other forms of social media. I'm not saying they can't be have depth and intimacy, but what we're refinding is this sense of our own feeling of who are we as people? How do we express that deeper sense of our own, as Rudolf Steiner says, our heart's earnest strivings, and communicate that to one another? And my wife and I, Patricia and our co-author, Cindy Wald, really tried to explain this in our book through what we call the convening wheel, which is really the nine steps or the nine pathways of the inner connection, the inner game of convening, of gathering and holding people, and the more practical outer practices and techniques, if you will. So
there is a statement made by your wife where she, and this is in the first part of your book, the role of the convener is to gather and hold people. And I am observing something, and this was just about a week ago when I was doing a class. And I really like smaller classes. I like, you know, maybe the maximum of 20 people because I like to integrate and interact with people doing various exercises. And I find that the most important thing that a person offers, if they're the convener, like your wife called herself, that there is that place of trust, that place of safety, where what people will be experiencing will be respected, and that there can be open communication. There doesn't have to be this sense of secrecy. I can recall having gone to major seminars or events and sometimes feeling rather overwhelmed, like, gee whiz, it wasn't worth, I really loved what went on, but there wasn't a place for me to share. And I find that there is such a hunger for this. People really want to integrate with individuals that when they can sort of have almost like a heart-to-heart connection, not necessarily to take over and control their lives, but they want something where they feel like they have been given, if you will, a little bit of mental elixir that's going to stay with them, that they can carry it away with them. And that is something that your wife brought out, that when she was doing an event, she found out when she was going through, because it was a full-day seminar, she was losing her focus. She was getting sidetracked into different things, and she had to pull herself back and say, wait a minute, what was my intention? Let me pull everything back on track and get myself back where I need to be.
Right.
And it shifted everything.
Yes.
Now, the two of you formed an organization called Heartland. And you have been doing this since, what, 1999? When did you start
1995.
This? 1995.
So we're in our 16th year.
And this is something that has grown for you. When you started this project, when you started this patterning, did you have any idea that it was going to grow to the level that it has to this point?
No, I had no idea. I had spent 20 years in magazine publishing, mainly consumer magazine publishing, publisher of magazines called Organic Gardening, Eating Well, Health and Food magazine, and then finally, I was publisher of Utney Reader magazine here in Minneapolis, and that's what brought us here 21 years ago. What we found together, Patricia and I have worked together. We've been married for 33 years, and we've worked together most of that time, was what we realized was really that organizations and leaders were the leaders within organizations or leader people taking a stand, people really out there making a difference in the world, whatever it be. It doesn't mean your name tag or your business card, what we meant by leaders, but people that really were passionate and stepping out and stepping forward to really make a difference in the world were really the conduits. And organizational life would be the delivery system through which a global renaissance would occur. And so we got very involved. I left Utney Reader, and we started a program called the Thought Leader Gatherings. And for 13 years, every month, we have been gathering leaders from various sectors, business, nonprofit, education, organized religion, even the military and government, to dialogue around the compelling issues that face us in our life and work. Given that leaders are going to be the catalyst for this global renaissance and our organizations are the delivery system. And so given that vision that we had, we set out on our course. And so over 13 years now of producing every single month except for 2 months, over 13 years, we've gathered these leaders, different leaders, over thousands of them over 13 years. And what we learned out of that is really in this book. It's really in these nine, what we call the nine aspects of the convening wheel. And I think what you spoke to initially is really what's at the heart of the matter. That's at the center of the wheel. And it literally is the heart of the matter. What's our purpose? What's our purpose as individuals as in relationship with others? And we call this the technology of relationships. So it really is a technology, this convening wheel. You know, it sounds hard. Relationship is soft. So there's a this interesting paradox. But that's where it all begins. It all begins at who am I in relationship with others? And that's where the technology of relationship begins. And then you go from there. You know, what's my intent to be with somebody? How do I invite somebody to come in like you invited me on your radio show? Mm-hmm. You know, you had an intent behind it and behind that a purpose. And so in every engagement that we talk about, whether it's just a conversation between friends or a larger gathering like our thought leader gatherings, there's always a purpose, an intent, an invitation that's extended, a context that's set, and so on and so forth. And it usually leads to an outcome, right? We like to have outcomes. You know, on your radio show, my guess is your outcome is to affect a lot of people and to have a lot of people listen in and get enthusiastic and inspired about you and your work and the people that come on your show. Well, you know, our purpose, bottom line, for the work that we do is that we are totally committed to a world that works for everyone. And we do it through conversations. We do it through this, what we call authentic engagements. And that's what floats our boat and gets us up in the morning.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to float the boat and get up in the morning. One of the things I want my listeners to know about are the nine aspects of the convening wheel. One is heart of the matter.
Yep.
Next one is clarifying intent, then the invitation, setting context, creating the container, hearing all the voices, essential conversation, and creation. So those are the nine components. You have a poem in here by Minx Bourne that I really liked.
Oh.
There is a journey of the heart that calls to those who are seeking something more. Beyond the well-traveled roads of repeated platitudes and long-held beliefs, there awaits a plentitude of new ideas yearning to be explored. Out there, somewhere in the realms of what we don't even know we don't know, lies a vast vista of possibilities open to discovery. Mm. I thought that that was a very, very powerfully stated truth, because so many times we can't see the forest for the trees. And I know so many people are engaged in that positioning, and good Lord, I know more than once in my life that's happened to me. Something is so close that you're, and I'm sure you can relate to it too, sometimes you're right in front of your answer and you can't see it because it's too close to your mental nodes.
Right.
And it's really a tough thing to do, and sometimes we make harder, you know, things harder than they should be for ourselves. But I really like that poem because there are options. There are possibilities. Yeah. There are so many options. And if we buy into the attitude that we don't have options, whoa, that is not going to work, because you're going to stay right where you are. You can't go anywhere because you're not going to believe you can get up out of whatever you're within or seated within. You're going to say, gee, if I leave this chair, I may not have one at all. Well, there is that aspect of risk, the risk of finding out your own inner greatness that is there waiting to just explode in its opportunity, whatever that opportunity may be. You also have exercises through the book, and there was one that really grabbed me, actually a couple of them. There was your first exercise is what do I stand for? There was an aspect strengthening exercise that you had in the book. There are so many of these that are sprinkled throughout the book. It's a very good thing to do, to be able to question yourself. When you're doing your seminars and your classes, do you find that people are surprised at the information they're able to give themselves?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You mentioned Minx. Minx is one of our trainers and a poet. As you can tell, I think your question, are people surprised? I think what surprises people more than anything is that something like a conversation or a meeting or a gathering, most of us take that for granted. We don't even think about the structure. We don't think about, as I said, the technology of that relationship or the structure of belonging, as Peter Block says. And so what's surprising to people is that we can actually create an environment to get the results that are effective. For example, when we gather with people, when we have a meeting, say a business meeting, or even a meeting at church or in a community, quite often what we do is we have an agenda and we have an outcome in mind, and we might communicate that, we may not communicate that. We bring people together and we launch right in. And we kind of, what we do is we go to the content or the outcome before we do anything else. And what surprises people is that you need to, like a garden, let's take the garden metaphor, you need to create the soil. You need to prepare the soil. Any gardener knows that before you put the seed in. You need to create a seed bed that's going to be able to nurture the plant. Well, the same thing has to happen in our relationships. We have to nurture. So what we talk about in creating the container, which you said was one of the nine aspects, and it's the fifth aspect, it's creating the physical and the energetic field in which we meet. So in other words, we're taking care of the physicality. Like, what does the room look like? What does the place look like? If we're wanting to have a conversation with a friend and we're convening it, meaning we're taking responsibility to have that conversation with somebody. Do you go to a noisy bar, or do you go to a quiet place where you can actually, you know, have a conversation? Do you ask the other person, well, what's going on in your life? How are you? Simple things like that. And when you do that, it's hearing the voices. When you ask somebody and you really listen deeply, you know, you're heard, you're present to one another, you create an environment of safety, and you create an environment of what we call generosity. And agreements are a big part of that. So how many meetings do we go to in which the convener or the meeting leader says, look, here's some agreements. Can we all agree to this? A, I'm going to be the convener. I'm going to be the facilitator of this meeting. I would like everyone to agree. If you don't agree, that's fine. That I'm going to lead this meeting. Another is confidentiality.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, what's said here stays here, so we can all speak our truth. Little things like that start to create a safe container. And then when we hear everyone's voice and allow everyone's voice to be heard in a meeting, you know, like going around saying, okay, what are your expectations for this meeting? You know, 30 seconds each. Then everybody gets to be present and accounted for, both energetically and realistically. So those are just a few things that, you know, can change the very nature of an engagement, a meeting, a gathering, conversation.
I agree. There is something about conversation, and I chuckled when I found this story in your book. You said that you learned about the lesson of listening for intent rather than the words from a Vermonter. Share that story with my audience, because I think it is so charming.
You're the first person in an interview that's ever brought that up. Congratulations. It's my favorite story.
You're welcome.
It's about the weather. It's about the importance of really deeply listening. How many times do we kind of judge ourselves and other people for small talk? That's where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
And the importance of small talk. And it came, the story that you're referring to is when I was a young man, I moved to rural Vermont and started a farm, and this old Vermonter came up, and we were standing next to each other, and he was looking down. You know, they're very taciturn, a bit shy, kicking the ground and not looking at me, and started saying, well, I guess it's going to rain today. I'd say, well, yeah, probably. And he said, well, yeah, it didn't rain yesterday, but tomorrow I think we're, and on and on and on, talking about the weather. And I'm going, okay, is this what he really wants to talk about? When are we really going to get to the heart of the matter, right? What's he really got on his mind?
Mm-hmm.
And we just talked that first time, and then we split company and came together again, and he started talking about the weather. And I thought, why does he keep talking about the weather, kicking the earth and not saying what he has on his mind? And then the third time we got together, he said, you know, it's been good getting to know you. He said, I want you to get to know my land, so I'm going to invite you to my farm. He invited me to his farm, and he took me around to the barn. He took me to meet his wife, his family, took me, you know, all over.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, this is my good friend Craig. We've gotten to know each other over time. And I'm saying to myself, we didn't get to know each other. He just talked about the weather.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all for him. It was about place. It was about listening. It was about just being together and me listening. And the fact that I listened to him and was there with him meant a whole lot. And so by the time he was willing to invite me to his place, he had really opened up a whole new realm. His name was Will Urey. He's long gone, but learned a great lesson from him about listening and about really what it means to have small talk and how important that can be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You also have another story in your book called Stringing the Beads. And I made a note in the book. I said, I love this because there is an exercise, and it's built on the metaphor that each person comes to any gathering as a unique individual.
That's correct.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, because people need to know that they are significant.
Well, first, in their unity. I want to really thank you for reading the book. It's refreshing that you did. Stringing the beads is maybe the most powerful metaphor and practice in the book. So if you think about yourself, if you come together with people and you... And remember, we're talking about hearing all the voices, right? And so when you invite people to gather, and say there's eight of us, and so the metaphor is that the eight people that are gathered are all beads, these beautiful, one-of-a-kind beads. There's never been one like you before. There's not one like you now, nor will there ever be. We are totally unique in our DNA every way. It's a miracle like that. And then... if we think of ourselves as a bead, a beautiful one-of-a-kind bead, the definition of a bead is it has a hole in it, right? A bead would not be a bead without a hole through it. Well, the reason there's a hole through it is because beads are meant to be joined with other beads. They're not meant to be solitary. They're meant to be joined with other beads to create something whole, bracelet, necklace, whatever.
Yes.
So fascinating metaphor. One of a kind, joined together to create wholeness. So with our voices as the thread, each of us speaks in turn around the circle, each bead passing the voice as the thread through the bead until we've all spoken. And when we've all spoken, we have created wholeness together. We have created something that we can hold together for that time that we are. We create something that is really quite powerful. And so I say this at the beginning of Stringing the Beads because it becomes then more than just a check-in. Kind of like, okay, this is who I am, what I'm doing. And it gives a metaphorical reason for how we're gathering. And the amazing thing is that people then really speak much more from their hearts. They they speak much more from their own authenticity. So that's the short version of that.
I want to share, because I know we're coming to the close of our time together, this wonderful poem, again by Minx Boron. While we wait for the celebration that will burst forth when the world is set aright, perhaps it would be good and wise to set a place at today's table where those who will do the work can be fed. And since we are those people, perhaps right here around these sturdy tables in glowing campfires and sacred places and living rooms everywhere right now is a good time to engage in conversations that matter, to speak up possibilities, to give language to our hopes, and with our words to begin to be the change we wish to see. Craig, this has been a delight having you as a guest. Your book is wonderful, and I think for anyone that would like to put together groups or want to have some kind of a structural basis to work with, I think your book, The Art of Convening, is outstanding. I really think it's excellently done. What is your website where people can go and find out more about your wonderful work?
Well, thank you. It's heartlandcircle.com, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, circle, one word, .com. And then you can also find us at The Art of Convening book. So you can Google us at Art of Convening. You can reach us on our website at heartlandcircle.com.
Well, Craig, this has been wonderful. You and Patricia and Cynthia have put together an excellent publication.
Thank you.
And I do appreciate your taking time out of your busy schedule to be with me and my listeners today. I wish you the best in all of your ongoing experiences. And when you get your next book out, be sure and let me know.
We will. Thank
this
you,
is,
Donna.
You're welcome, Craig. This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break, and we'll be coming back to take both your calls and to share some neat things with you. So don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, the toll-free worldwide number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a quote with you by James F. Bell. And this quote reads as follows: to face tomorrow with the thought of using the methods of yesterday is to envision life at a standstill. To keep ahead, each one of us, no matter what our task, must search for new and better methods. For even that which we now do well must be done better tomorrow. Sort of fits with our phenomenally, rapidly progressing levels of technology, doesn't it? And there are so many things, just like my guest talking about the art of convening, setting up meetings, doing things. Certain protocols stay the same, but there's a whole new agenda that is evolving, a new level of being able to integrate with social networking. And it's a big learning curve for a lot of us. And I just think it's phenomenal when I reflect back on just 10 years ago. And look at what we've got going on today. It's absolutely amazing. So I wanted to share that quote with you. Now, by the way, again, if you want to call me, the telephone number to call is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Thomas Luckenbill, Staying Awake, A True Story of Life in Death. This is a phenomenal story that this man took the time to write out and share. And it's absolutely amazing. It's what he went through when his mother was dying and the experiences that he had. So it's absolutely fabulous, and I hope you'll tell your friends, share with them the fact that we have these wonderful guests, and at any time they can tune in and check us out on the archives. If you've missed a show, you can get that very, very easily. Just go in and check it out, find out what you need to do, and you can pick up on the shows that maybe you were not able to enjoy. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. I have some health information regarding procedures to avoid. If you have had a member of your family, which I have had more than one, that have encountered heart problems, they're dealing with certain issues, it's very important that we stay in that learning curve, that awareness, that we need to be aware of certain protocols. Now, I received an item from Consumer Reports, and of course, there's a lot of research that they do that they go into checking out. And they talk in this one article about heart disease remaining the number one killer of all U.S. adults. And people get really, really anxious about this. Well, in their research, they found that the marketing strategies that we so often see on television or we read about in magazines about the dangers of heart disease and what you should do, etc., they're exploiting fear. And there was a physician, Kimberly Lovett. Now, this is a doctor who's at Kaiser Permanente and is a member of the San Diego Center for Patient Safety at the University of California, San Diego School of Medicine. And this doctor said, these marketing strategies exploit patients' fears and promote tests that aren't necessary for most people. Now, if you're someone that has gone through experiences with a loved one or you're aware of people that have had these conditions, you go, wow, then what do you do? Well, apparently, there was an editorial in June of this year in the Journal of the American Medical Association saying that inappropriate testing can lead to inappropriate treatment. Direct-to-consumer cardiac testing may pose more harm than benefit. Well, physicians are really coming up to the plate of honesty regarding this. And there is a lot of what they call high-tech gadgetry. Now, in some instances, this is very viable. But in so many instances, when you go in to stay at the hospital, every time something like this is used, the bill goes up. And we all know about the healthcare situation and the noise that's being made about this. And I'll tell you, there's a member of my family that just recently was in the hospital, and a hospital stay was $10,000 a day, and that did not even include surgery. This was a person staying in bed, getting medications, and being monitored. $10,000 a day. So apparently, Consumer Reports decided they were going to do an interview. They talked to a number of physicians of different health professionals, and they put out a survey to more than 8,000 subscribers of their magazine, and this is what they got back in their information. They also did an analysis of medical research, marketing materials, and the available data on heart doctors. This was the first thing that came up. People often get the wrong tests. Good tests, as they say, detect disease and lead to effective treatments. But many, many heavily marketed cardiac tests don't even do it. To say the wrong test is a waste of resources, it can be downright dangerous if it leads to inappropriate treatment. Angioplasty. Now, this saved my husband's life 27 years ago. However, they have found that there are all too many patients in non-emergency situations that are rushed in to have an angioplasty done. And, of course, we know that this is a procedure that clears blockages in the coronary arteries. But they say this can be avoided. People can change their diet, exercise. Certain medications would be just as effective and actually safer. Very, very interesting. And they say that the angioplasty is too often used for severe blockages when surgery to bypass the occluded arteries could provide longer-lasting benefits. Also, they've discovered consumers don't have enough information on heart doctors. So they teamed with a Society of Thoracic Surgeons to publish ratings of heart surgery groups that perform bypass surgery. But they don't have any comparable registry for interventional cardiologists. who perform angioplasty. So you are going to need to be aware that if you have a loved one, or if you may have, a genetic patterning in the family that can lead to heart problems, then what you might want to do is be aware you're going to have to start asking questions. And I know sometimes that can be problematic because many times physicians don't want you to do that. We encountered that with our family member. The physician said, just do as I say. Don't question. Well, the questions were put there. And finally, answers came through, interestingly enough, from nurses more often than from the doctors. I think we're going to see a time when nurses are going to be much more involved with the patient care than what has been typically allowed, because the nurses are seeing the patients day in and day out, spending a lot more time with them than the doctors do. Also, there are major differences regarding heart surgeons, and by golly, quality can vary. They say many practices by surgeons are not following latest guidelines, so you must talk to physicians if there is that opportunity. If someone has to go into ER, that's another scenario. But asking questions and being aware is very important. And one of the big factors they found out is that heart disease itself is often misunderstood. And a statement was made by a physician, Stephen Nesson. He said, medicine doesn't change quickly or easily. Now, Dr. Nesson is the chairman of the Department of Cardiovascular Medicine at the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio. And he says it may take years for evidence to trickle down to private practice. So you may want to check into it, go to your local library, check out a magazine on Consumer Reports, because this is a magazine that came out for this month. And I just think that this information, again, if you've had anyone in your family that's gone through serious health problems, it is a good read. Actually, it's their September issue. That's right. They send it out, I guess, a month in advance. So it's their September issue of 2011. They've got all kinds of good information in here. This is from the research that they've found, and I think it is a very, very good thing to read. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. If you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then after that, I'll tell you what I perceive, and then you can ask me a question about anything that you like. Well, this morning I was out at the Washington Renaissance Fair site. The first weekend is coming up, day after tomorrow, and our weather is gorgeous. And to me, it's always fascinating whenever I involve myself with a fair or I'm doing an appearance at a show. It seems like there is a magic. When you first go there, everything looks so dull and blah, and then you go back and everything is alive with color. People's imaginations create all kinds of images and designs and displays. It's magical. And that's exactly what's going to be happening at the Renaissance Fair. For those of you who are in the state of Washington, this is at the Kelly Farm in Bonnie Lake. You bring your family. It is a family event. And I went and I checked out where they're going to have the jousting. We had Amy on yesterday. She was talking about this wonderful acrobatic group that's come up from Florida that's going to be doing tremendous shows. And there's so much, much more. We've got jugglers. We've got all kinds of entertainment, singing, dancing. It's just absolutely marvelous. And it's going to be held at the Kelly Farm at 221 Buckley Highway in Bonnie Lake. So go into their website at the Washington Renaissance Fair, WashingtonMidsummerRenaissanceFair.com. You'll be able to find out exactly what you need to know regarding tickets. Ample parking, no charge for parking. You just go in and be prepared. Have on good walking shoes and just know that you're going to have a marvelous, marvelous day there at the fair. And I'm going to be there. Look for my booth that has the gigantic red lions on a bright yellow banner. They're just huge. You can't miss them. I'll be there and I'll be doing mini sessions. I'll have an abundance of books and also some little angels. But more than anything else, come by and say hello. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break for just a moment. We're going to be back in just a minute. Don't go away. Don't forget, you can give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Are you a fan of chocolate chip cookies? Well, I'm a fan of chocolate. And chocolate chip cookies, my goodness, I have such wonderful memories from the time I was a little girl because that was always a very, very special treat. And I think that little girl part of me still enjoys chocolate chips immensely, whether it's by the handful or mixed in with cookies. But I want to share this cute story with you. It's about a couple. And they had a chocolate chip cookie contest. And I just love this story. I really had to share it. Now, Chanel and her husband, Lonnie, they've been married for quite a while. And they had their kids. They had four kids, actually. And there was a family tradition. And that was that mom was to enter into the Whiteside County Fair. And she said, oh, we just had a wonderful time, and we've won a number of shiny blue ribbons. Well, Mom was really very, very good at it. The boys had signed up for a lot of projects, but Chanel just was so tired. She had so much on her plate. I mean, my goodness, with a family as large as hers, you can imagine she's busier than a one-armed paper hanger, and the idea of baking up anything, it's like, oh, please, do I want to do this? I don't think so. Well, her husband comes in one day, and he said, how come you're not fixing your chocolate chip cookies? Don't you just love that when a member of your family says that to you, and you're just totally exhausted? Don't you think you just want to hit him in the head with a skillet? Yeah, okay. Well, and her husband was saying, well, don't you use this? You know, you're not making the cookies. We're supposed to have test batches. Uh-huh. Well, she was so exhausted, she just looked at him. She said, not going to do it this year. And he said, okay, I'm sorry. After all, her youngest one was just a year old, so babies take a lot of energy. So her husband said, you know what? I'm going to help the kids get their stuff done. And you know what I'm going to do? He said, I'm going to go win the blue ribbon. I'm going to make the chocolate chip cookies. She said, oh, yeah, sure. Sure. He said, well, it can't be too hard to make good chocolate chip cookies. And so she just looked at him. Chanel said, you don't have the recipe I've got. He said, I got my own. I'll make up my own. And so what that did, that sort of got Chanel's hackle up a little bit. And she said, okay, I've changed my mind. I'm entering a contest too. He said, now, wait a minute. I just said I was going to make the chocolate chip cookies. Now you told me you were too tired. You're not going to enter into the competition? She said, uh-huh. So here we go, husband and wife. Well, a few nights later, her husband comes home and he tells the boys, he said, okay, time for me to make my cookies. So she said, okay, I got to get in the kitchen too. So here are the two of them. They've got flour out, and they've got their sugar, their chocolate chips, the butter, the vanilla, and the kids are all involved. The kids are right there helping Mom and Dad. And there was a cookbook that Chanel had with her blue ribbon recipes in it. And when the page was open to the cookie section, one of the recipes was this award-winning chocolate chip cookie. Dad said, okay, this recipe said you have to have three helpers to make the cookies. And all of the kids said to their dad, we're not helping you, Dad. No, we're not helping you. We always help Mom. Don't you just love family loyalty? And so Mom's standing in the doorway, and, of course, this really tickles her no end because her kids are saying, no, we're loyal. We always help Mom. We don't help you, Dad. No, we're not going to do that. So anyhow, Dad started doing his mix, and, of course, Chanel was watching her husband, and she said, oh, be careful, you're going to make a mess. You know how we women get with this type of thing. Mm-hmm. So the husband said to her, now you just leave me alone. I'm going to do this. I'm going to make these cookies, and I don't want you to know about my secrets. Well, all of them were just laughing like crazy. They were just having a great time. And she said what really meant a lot to her is that this lightened up her attitude and lightened up her day because the family was involved in all of this kibitzing going back and forth. So she eventually got into the kitchen, made her batch, and they got everything ready because the day for the fair finally came around, and it was absolutely marvelous. The boys had won blue ribbons for their entry. And then when it came to her entry and her husband's, well, she found that her entry was at the front where the winners were going to be declared. And she looked all around for her husband's cookies, and she couldn't find them. Well, she got a blue ribbon. So the family tradition was in place. But one of the kids said, gee, Dad, you didn't get a blue ribbon. I know how hard you worked. But Dad said something. He says, it's okay. Look at the smile on your mom's face. I won anyway. And it was just absolutely wonderful. This whole family got involved, and she said, my husband truly understood what I needed. She said, sometimes even better than I do. Well, she shared her recipe, and I wanted to give it to you because it's real simple. And this is something that I think you will really enjoy. So get that pad of paper and pen out. Now, this is what you're going to need. 3/4 cup of white sugar. 3/4 cup of brown sugar. 3/4 cup of brown sugar. And remember to pack it tightly in the cup. You're going to need 1/2 cup of butter. 1/2 cup of butter. 1/2 cup of other shortening. And if you don't want to use another shortening, just add 1/2 cup of butter. 3 eggs. And remember, all of these items should be at room temperature. 3 eggs, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, 1 teaspoon of salt, 2 3/4 cups of flour, and 1 12-ounce bag of semi-sweet chocolate chips. Now, this is how simple it is. You preheat your oven to 350 degrees, cream your sugars, your butter, and the additional shortening, or all of the butter, whatever you want to use. Add your eggs one at a time. Stir after each addition. I use a beater on a mixer. I'm lazy. I don't want to stir this stuff by hand. Add your soda and salt. Sift in your flour. Stir. Be careful not to overmix because it'll make the cookie tough. Fold in your chocolate chips. I like to use my hands when I do that. It really works well. And then place large heaps of cookie dough on a baking stone. She uses a baking stone. That's one of her secrets. So you put the baking stone in the oven and let it get good and hot. Bake it for 8 minutes. You want to remove them while they still look soft. They'll continue to bake on the stone. You'll make 12 cookies out of that batch. Mm-hmm. Yum. Really good. Donna Sebo here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Whether it's making chocolate chips or sharing time with a friend, no matter what you do, enjoy the moment. Be present with whatever you are involved with or with whomever you are having a conversation with or a relationship with. Be present in the moment that you share with them. It really does make a difference. And you never know how much you're going to affect other people's lives because of being in that habit. This is Donna Sebo. We'll talk with you tomorrow right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now. Have an awesome summer day, wherever you are, or summer evening. wherever you are. Talk with you then. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.